Hey, did you guys read that thing in the New Yorker last month about how golf is an analogy for marriage?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did read that. Did you hear the thing at McSweeney's? Mm. It was comparing CD tracks and album tracks. Did you read that?
Yeah. Did you read that thing in Mother Jones about eco chairs and eco ways to sit?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Did you read that thing in Spain about all the festivals?
Did you read that thing in Pace? It was about the National.
Oh, I saw that. Did you see that thing in Dwell about all the mid-century houses?
Yeah. Did you read the New York Times?
Yes.
New York Observer?
Yes.
Washington Post?
Yes.
Wall Street Journal?
Of course I read it.
Did you read that steampunk article in Boing Boing?
I did not like the end of it.
Did you read that skywriting over the Willamette River?
Yes. Did you read that fortune cookie?
Yes.
From last night?
Yes.
Did you read it?
Yes.
There were two.
Yes. Did you read that thing that guy wrote in the sand on the beach?
Yeah.
Did you read the Portland Mercury?
Yeah.
Did you read the Willamette Week?
Yeah.
Did you read the Seattle Stranger?
Beginning to end.
Did you read the SF Weekly?
I loved it.
The Harvard Lampoon?
Well written.
Did you read Mad Magazine?
I did not like the end of it.
TBTL!
Today, I am making this studio a no-embarrassment zone.
My dream is to sail around the world on a catamaran with two members of every cat race and share my love with cats for all the humans to see around the world.
Before we go any further, I need to know if there are any hidden recording devices in the room. I will find out if there are.
Yeah, I'm sure you would, but there's none, because that would be stupid of us, and we're not stupid.
Silly move.
It's a no.
Oh, my God, man. We are seeing some shit we ain't never seen before.
Brew Dog, you ready? Oh, my gosh. Hi, everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Is it too early to get a fish sandwich?
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
You paint your bald spot?
What bald spot?
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, Bellingham, Washington. The Bay City. Pod Dog is right there behind me.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
We've obviously started recording the shows earlier now than in months and years past, and I feel like when we did the show in the afternoon, it's hard to get the Pod Dog interested in what was going on. But I laughed at the beginning of the show because I realized that what starts to happen now is that we have this whole morning ritual, of course, as I'm sure many of you do. But I have my coffee, and Rudy has some itching problems, and so she got medicine for that, which she is so happy about. I think she might have faked the whole itching issue because you have to give her the medicine in a treat. You put in a piece of string cheese or something. So she's loving that. I mean, she would take any malady she can get if it means she also gets, after her breakfast, additional foodstuffs. But we do that, have my coffee, wait for it to get light out, let the Bay Kitty in and out of the house 30 to 40 times.
There is something about the soul of a cat.
And then I look up and I'm like, where is the dog? I walk down here. She's in the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center. She's already curled up in her dog bed. She got here before me. She is ready to do this, you people. And so am I. It's episode 2781 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
And as has become kind of a pretty common occurrence on the show, we've got some news out of Australia for you today.
Australia is a wonderful island.
And Australians are just as unique, both warm and direct.
You may have seen the pictures or the video of Knickers, the enormous Australian cow.
Holy steroids. Don't eat that one.
We will tell you the latest with Knickers. And there's actually some news in the Knickers department. Don't say that on a date, by the way. If you ever say, hey, there's some news in the Knickers department. I mean, or do. I don't know. I don't know your life. Anyway, we will talk about that. And then keeping things in Australia, we've been trying to get to this article for weeks now about the history behind Australian accents and why it is that it's so hard for people who are not Australian to do a passable Australian accent. It's not just me, you guys. Even Meryl Streep, when she was saying a dingo ate her baby, even Meryl Streep was not able to convincingly pull off an Australian accent. And there's some theories behind that. One has to do with, believe it or not, drunken convicts.
Drunk people are so meta.
So we'll get into that. Oh, and we have some suggestions for our TBTL Valentine's Day radio special, which will be airing in November, or I should say in February. It'd be great if the window for our radio special was November to March. Anytime within that window, you might hear a TBTL Valentine's special on your local public radio station.
Happy Valentine's!
Anyway, we're gonna we'll go through some of the listener suggestions for names for that episode. We'll do that. We'll do emails and females. I got Sharp Shot on Tim Allen, and I am not taking it lying down. Disagree with the listener. More on that coming up. With this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show. To me, he's an innocent champion of honesty when he's speaking. He's an angel that poops in a box. He's just here so he won't get fired. And guess what?
I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet.
He might have tacos when he has dinner tonight, which is many hours away. He's sending us essentially a pajama grom right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. He's Andrew Welsh. Good morning, my dude.
Good morning, Luke. I gotta admit, I'm getting off to a slow start this morning. I don't know why.
Really?
I feel like my brain is about 4 seconds behind my mouth. Usually I'm coasting along at a good 3 seconds, and that's my comfort zone. Sure. This extra drag I'm getting this morning, it might cause problems in the show. Let's hope not. And let's just remember that everything can be edited.
Yesterday was your birthday. Did you do some birthday celebrating? Did you set the Madden game on easier or something to just treat yourself?
That's about the long and short of it. Yeah. I did not do anything. We didn't go out. Genevieve offered many times if I wanted to go have a nice meal or do anything. And honestly, I like to treat myself the way you just described, with a Miller Lite and an easy game of Madden. And I'll tell you what, that was in the back of my mind. I stayed up way too late last night. I probably didn't go to bed until after midnight. I get up at 6 now, so that was not giving myself, it's not the worst, but I kept playing because, first of all, a couple of things here. I was playing a matchup between the Seahawks and the 49ers to get ready for this weekend's IRL game, as you do when you're 12 years old living inside of a 42-year-old's body.
Dude,
and I was doing
well. I didn't
even
think about that as a possibility, but that's a great idea.
Of course, that's what you do.
That's the most compelling argument for getting into Madden that I've heard, and I'm not messing with you right now.
Yeah, no, and I'll tell you what, I tried that matchup yesterday. It was terrible. I had to quit in the third quarter. I tried it again, or I'm sorry, that was 2 days ago. I tried it again last night. I was on a hot streak. Russ looked great. And so I kept playing well into the evening, and now we have to, now you and the listeners have to reckon with that. But in the back of my head, I gotta say, I don't lean on my birthday much, but there was this voice in my head that I was almost mocking with a different part of my brain that kept saying, "It's your birthday, dude, stay up."
Yeah, I get it. You know, I'm not trying to give you unsolicited sleeping advice, but I will, sleeping habit advice. But man, this, thing on my phone that I talked about last week, whatever this bedtime deal is, it's been very good for me for a few reasons. I mentioned that it doesn't turn the phone, it doesn't sort of brick the phone overnight, but it does make it a little harder to get to the messages, like the text messages and the Twitter and things like that, because that was an unfortunate habit I have, to check my phone while I'm peeing in the middle of the night, because as if it matters. But so that's one good thing, because now I've just stopped taking the phone. If I get up to pee, I don't take the phone with me because I know there's no point. The other thing, though, is it sends me this reminder. My reminder happens at 9:30, which is so early. So early. It helps, actually. You know what? It helps that it's getting dark at 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
I've complained about that endlessly. But when it gets dark at 4:30, your brain's like, oh, man, it's nighttime. So then when 9:30 comes, it's this makes sense. What's going to suck is when it's this summer and it's 9:30 and it's still light and my alarm's going, time for bed, bro.
Exactly.
But what happens now is at 9:30, it just gently reminds me that, hey, you know, it's time to start getting ready for bed, because my goal is to be in bed by about 10. And it has actually been kind of effective. I was watching a variety of bizarre Netflix programming last night, including this documentary about the World's Strongest Man competition, which, oh my God, is so good. I have no desire to be one of those guys. That's not something I aspire to, but I'm fascinated with just the lifestyle of being someone who can lift 1,000 pounds and how much food you have to eat to make that happen. So I was watching that. I was enjoying it, but there was about an hour left in it, and then the little thing said, hey, start thinking about bed. And I was like, yeah, I'll come back to this tomorrow. So I don't know if setting an alarm like that for yourself would, and I don't even know if you're saying you want to try to go to bed earlier. I'm not trying to tell you how to live your life, but that's been useful to me.
Yeah, I think that I remain pretty aware of the time. I think I start a countdown early in my head, especially now that I do have a time that I have to wake up. And I would like to say, reiterate, like this whole process, you and I guess we're in our third week of doing morning shows. And I think some people might be like, you had a schedule where you didn't have to wake up early. Why would you put that on yourself almost voluntarily? But it's been great. Like being on a regular schedule, having a reason to, even though I'd never like waking up, I never like the feeling when my alarm goes off in the morning, it doesn't take me too long to wake up and realize this is still better for me, generally speaking, for a whole host of reasons. So I do like it. But now that I know that I'm waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, I think around 8:30, I start becoming very aware of what time it is. Like Veeves and I recorded it was Tuesday. We always record a podcast on Tuesdays. So then after these messages, we'll be right back. And then we wrapped up around 8:30, I think. And like, I remember saying to Veeves, 8:30, I got about it. No, maybe I got done around 8 o'clock, and I was like, all right, 8 o'clock, I got 1 hour of me time. And I knew that I wasn't actually going to go to bed at 9, but I automatically right. start counting down to that 9 o'clock, and then I start counting up when I get past it, and you know, I feel like I'm on borrowed time a little bit.
Yeah, you got to get your night cheese on. Mm-hmm. But increasingly for me, morning cheese is becoming my night cheese. And I'm noticing something else. I'm noticing it, Senpai. Boy, we really dropped off the radar with that audio Jim, got to bring that. Oh,
I'll bring that. You just hey, wait till
I'll
tomorrow's
bring it back
intro.
To 1,000.
Yeah.
I've noticed that like when I was practically everything in my life was revolving around around systems that were related to me being drunk a lot of the time. And by the way, if it were easy, everyone would do it. I recognize that. So I'm proud of some of my exploits, me and Tyrion. But like, I'm really enjoying being up in the morning, and I had the other yesterday. I got up and I actually straightened up the house for an hour in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Things weren't like a total mess, but there were some dishes that I wanted to put in the dishwasher, and I just just did miscellaneous things. That would have been unheard of for me a few months ago because everything was inverted. Mm-hmm. So I knew that mornings were going to suck for me a lot of the time. So I would get everything – I would get drunk and then do dishes, clean, do everything I could do so that when I got up and make the coffee, get the coffee ready, all that, so I could get up in the morning and just walk out and just cope with the fact that I wasn't feeling good. But it's weird because now I get up in the morning and I still to some degree enjoy having the house in nice shape when I go to bed because it's a good feeling to get up and just – Carrie's working in Seattle 3 days a week now, and so I got the house to myself a lot. And God, I got all my systems, man. My morning cheese game is strong right now. Like, I get up, I turn on KUOW, I listen to that for about an hour as I putter around and I make my coffee and I get ready for the show. Then I switch to the Oscar Peterson Trio for a while when I need to send some emails and things because sometimes the talking is distracting if I'm trying to think. Maybe slip in a couple, 20 minutes of the Howard Stern show too in there. But I have all my kind of like audio game going. I got all my special systems with coffee and grape nuts now, and I'm loving it. So it's funny because for me, my nights are, I'm a little less, I don't have as many night rituals, but I have more morning rituals.
What's it like with Carrie gone 3 days a week? You guys have been doing this for a few months now, right?
Yeah. She got this gig in Seattle working at this design company, which is a really cool opportunity for her. But part of it was that at least for the initial while she's kind of like learning the ropes of everything, she's going to have to be down there. I mean, hopefully eventually it will be a thing, I think, where she can just be down there maybe a couple days a week. But it's been, it's a bummer. Our life has lived at what we really need, Andrew, is a couple of those portal tablets so I can set those right. up and walk around the house.
Oh, did you see the commercial where they make it seem like the camera can follow you around? Come on. This isn't the future. Dude, I forgot that part of my rant. I actually did say that during my rant. I said, if that was an actual function, they would make more of a deal of it. It would be super cool. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So it's a bummer. I miss her a lot. But I also have to say, I'm the king of the castle. So in a certain way, I understand actually much more like what would happen when I used to travel a ton and – those days are not totally over for me. But like there was always this dynamic where it would be like I would leave and I think Carrie would be a little bummed I was gone. And then once I was gone for a few days, she would settle into her rituals And then when I'd come back, I'd be like, oh, I'm excited you're back. But also now there's this.
We have a system
big
for the dishes or
we have
whatever.
A system in this house for everything.
Yeah.
And now there's this big homunculus in the house who wants to do things his way or whatever. Like, it's weird. You adjust to whatever your thing is. And so I wish Carrie was around here more, and I miss her. I really miss her smell. My wife smells really good, which I got to just pheromonally, I guess. I don't know what. I can't overstate what a nice element of the many nice elements that my wife presents in the world. That's a real nice one. I miss her smell. But that being said, I fucking love playing Howard Stern really loud at 6:45 in the morning. And Oscar Peterson. So it's, you know, it's a, I don't know, it's kind of a trade-off. I enjoy having my run of the place to some degree. I think I would like to have my run of the place like 1.5 days a week or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is more run of the place than I need, but it's not the worst having my scene all dialed in.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like, as you're describing that, it must be like, you know, I don't know why my brain's going here, but I grew up kind of in a rural part of the country where I think a lot of families, maybe not a lot, but maybe proportionally more than in my life now, a lot of families had like a mom or dad who was a truck driver. And so there'd be like just a lot of time out on the road.
Right.
And you just kind of knew that certain families, you know, had that situation. And I'm an adult and I think about them like, yeah, you kind of have like a truck driving kind of lifestyle where it must be hard to kind of do that. Every time you get into a rhythm, then you switch back to the other rhythm. And for me now, I think I'm an extreme person when it comes to ritual, et cetera. But that would probably be especially tough on me because I feel like I always need a buffer day for any change. Oh, what? We have to go to a party? Okay, then I need the next 2 days off. You know, I mean, that's not normal, but it's also kind of honest. And so, you know, getting used to those transitions back and forth, I don't know how well I would do with something like that, especially because I do start. I mean, if you that feeling you have of being alone, I wonder if I even take it to a different level. It's hard to say because you and I have never seen each other when we're alone. We can't.
I will tell you this, by definition, that's called Schrodinger's Walsh.
That's what the show is called, certainly.
Definitely. We got there. I was saying yesterday, I got to lay off my public radio, my Terry Gross jokes. Schrodinger's fill in the blank is also one of my very overused go-tos, unfortunately. But, I think I gave it a little bit of a break. So what I was going to say is one thing that is, I guess, can't be debated is that my relationship with the animals here and the way I talk to them has gone to newly bananas, just bonkers heights.
Like, you just got to leave a recorder on for a day and forget about it and then share it with us.
You think
later.
I'm embarrassed? Well, I do. It's called the Amazon robot.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Recording everything I do. No, you think that I was embarrassed about my Monster Jam talk that I gave to a stadium in Tampa thanking the brave men and women of Monster Jam for their service. You think that was embarrassing? Oh my God, dude. It is like I say the most insane. It's not even words. It's just sound. I'm Nell. I just go like I just start talking to the animals in weird sound effects that in my mind, because I know here's what it is. I know they don't understand English. It's just the sound anyway. And sometimes I don't know. I just don't have it in me to form words. So I'll just start making.
Give me a taste of this sweet shit. Come on. Just a little taste.
I can't. You know what I mean? I can't do it right now because I can't think of it. If I – no joke, because we're trying to always create hashtag content for the show. If I can like get into that place or if I can think of a way to do it, I will, because even though it's embarrassing, I think it would be funny to the listeners. I'm not trying to not do it here. I just honestly – it's like the kind of thing where I walk – so what happens is I – at about 5:30, Rudy queues up outside the bedroom door.
Mm-hmm.
I had a real breakthrough, which was I took her. She has a collar that has all this like her dog tag, everything hanging off of it. And it's so loud. So I took that off. And it's great because now I don't hear her as much at 5:30 in the morning. So I can sleep all the way until 6. So then she starts lining up. I open the door and she just starts going crazy. She's so excited that she's about to get breakfast. So then I'll just say some weird thing to her. And then we walk down the hall and then the cat is usually hanging out outside either the back door or the front door, usually the back door. And I open the door for her and I say something weird to her. And then I just continue. It's evolved over time. It used to be like sometimes I would sing a song It was sort of set to the tune of Dreamcatcher, like, you know, okay, the one we yeah. play. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it would be Rue Doggins.
Okay.
But it's sort again, it's it, that was where it started. And now it's in some other place where I don't I honestly don't think it's even like words that anyone that it's not a human language. It's just noises.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
do you ever
things
sing,
are going well up here is my point.
Do you ever sing Backdoor Cat to the tune of Backdoor Man to Rudy when you see her going in out of the back door? I could see myself doing that.
No, because I hate the Doors.
I think that's an old blues song, though. I mean, don't. Sure, but I don't really like it either because I don't like the.
It will always
entendre.
Be associated with Jim yeah. Morrison in my mind.
Yeah.
So no, but see the songs. That's the thing. The songs are not related to stuff that's going on. Like that's almost like too literal for what I'm doing. It's more just. I'll really like sit down and kind of. I'll really make a note about this next time I'm doing it so I can explain it better to you. Because, again, even though it's humiliating, I tend to think that the listeners, and maybe even you to some degree, can relate.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
oh,
you don't
gosh,
sing
yeah, that's
nonverbal
yeah.
songs, but I'm sure your relationship with Theo and Bananas when there's no one around, it's probably got some stuff going on, too.
Yeah. And do you ever sing to Olive, I'm going to try one more time, Love Her Catly? Just kidding. I'm trying to think of other Doors songs that you would hate.
now I'm... Oh man! Somebody
I'm trying to think of more.
Somebody
Doors
wrote
songs.
On Twitter. We got to go to a break here. Yeah. Somebody wrote on Twitter though. This like they just excerpted. Was it Riders? No, it wasn't Riders on the Storm. It was. Give me the top.
Light My Fire.
Not Light My Fire. What would you say are the top five most popular Doors songs? I never figured you for a Doors fan, but can you give me the top five?
Who
what you think
bass?
Are probably the most popular?
No bass. I feel like what was the one that you said? Break On Through, Light My Fire. Is it like one of the really, really pretentious ones that you're trying to think of? Like kind of.
It was, man. It's. I think Paul F. Tompkins. Retweeted it. It was someone just basically laying out some lyrics to a famous Doors song, not an obscure, not a deep cut. Mm-hmm. And they were so ludicrously dumb. And it was now imagine this was the setup. Again, it really suffers from not having the specific example. But the guy's point was, imagine someone comes to you and says, hey, these are the lyrics to the song I just wrote. Oh, and by the way, this is going to become part of rock and roll canon.
Right.
And you just look at the words and you're just like, this is madness.
Oh,
I mean, it's
yeah.
not even in an interesting way. This is so dumb. And then again, it was the fact that it's from a very popular Doors song. It's not just like, because I mean, anyone can put out some Van Dyke Park shit. I'm not over that, by the way. I'm clearly not over that. Anybody can put out some gobbledygook, but the fact that we Americans were like, this gobbledygook is one of the top 20 rock songs ever written is
yeah.
still, to me, fairly shocking. I'll figure this out later, and maybe tomorrow I can clarify just so that I don't know. I can get it off of my brain or something. What specific song it was, but anyway.
Can I just say one thing that I think it's been on the edge of my brain lately that I'm kind of maybe coming to grips with is. So you're describing like almost the reading Doors lyrics or listening to a Doors song and paying attention to the lyrics is almost embarrassing, right? You almost get that almost like watching a Jerry Lewis film, sort of like you take on the embarrassment, sort of. At least that's how I can react to Doors stuff, but. Obviously, there was a time in my life when that was just catnip for my brain. Now, I was in high school and maybe even that's right. Eighth grade, I got my first three Doors records. And they were on vinyl, and I got them at a flea market. And like those times, honestly, I look at it and I feel like they changed my life. They were very important moments in my life that I was listening to these Doors records and sucking them up and reading some bullshit Jim Morrison biography that was probably called The Lizard Lives or who God knows what. And like I'm now – and I think I went through with a lot of bands. I'm just picking on the Doors now because this is where we are. But like there was a time when they blew my mind and I was obsessed with them. And then I got older and I looked at it through a context of like, oh my God, this shit is super embarrassing. I can't believe how into this shit I was. And now I think a more recent phase or something that I'm coming into is I am glad I had this old obsession because now – I feel very nostalgic for this stuff, and it might have to do with me pulling out my old CDs and cassettes, which I've done recently. And now I'm in this world where I can listen to it, I can acknowledge that it's embarrassing, but I can also sort of non-embarrassedly just enjoy it for what it is. And I think that I think me talking about that band Shocking Blue, that 60s psychedelia band that we got in a jag about the other day, and that was kind of new to me but still from this era.
I Am Your Venus, I Am Your Fire.
Right. People. And Love Buzz, which the Nirvana end up covering. Anyway, all of that is to say it's like I find myself kind of hearkening back to some of this shit, whether it's new to me now or old to me. And part of me is now like, I'm glad I used to be obsessed with the Doors, because if I heard them now for the first time, I would never listen to them. But I kind of like the fact that they are in my life, even though a lot of it is indefensible. Does any of that make sense? I'm trying to explain 100%. Middle age.
I think you've done a pretty good job. I think our listeners can probably relate to a lot of that. For me, there are a lot of bands that are like that. It's not even because some of their stuff is cringeworthy. It's because I just don't have any room anymore for new things.
Yeah.
So, like, for instance, I think I mentioned this a while ago, that Michael Penn, the singer Michael Penn, had an album. He's Sean Penn's brother, and he's often collaborator with Paul Thomas Anderson. And I think he used to be married to Amy Mann, is married to Amy Mann.
Definitely collaborated with her on a lot of stuff, right?
Yes. Yep. There's an album which I always confuse. I think it's called No Myth is the name of the album. But, like, I was listening to that the other day here in the house, and it's like it's from when I was in high school, and I love it. But there's no universe in which I would, at age 42, be like, let me go back and find this and, like, get into it. Or if it was put out now, it would be unlikely I would have room in my brain for it, or even maybe like it as much as I like it. I'm agreeing with you, mm-hmm. and saying, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. There are, and I can think of like Ani DiFranco. For mm-hmm. me, or like mm-hmm. certain, like Dion Ferris, who was a singer who was in Arrested Development, not the TV show, the band. Mm-hmm. She sang she was like kind of like a backup singer in that band, but then she had a solo CD, which is, I don't think, probably looking back on it, really particularly groundbreaking. But like, I used to listen to it when Addie was little, and we used to drive around and listen to this CD. Anyway, point being, yeah, I totally know what you're talking about. There's a lot of music that I have a lot of love for that I'm glad it got into my life when it did, because there wouldn't be room in it for one reason or another.
Yes,
now.
Yeah, exactly. The album, by the way, is March. I don't know what I was just looking up. The
March,
album is called
God.
March, and No
There's
Myth.
There's a song
is,
called No Myth.
Yeah.
There's a song called Half Harvest. No Myth was the radio hit from that album. I always, for some reason, cannot remember the name of the album. Okay, March.
Let's come back with No Myth, because I'd like to know if I know it or not.
Okay, let's do that. And that's a good. Oh man, do you ever? I don't know if this is. I am just now listing things that I'm looking at, because I'm looking over Lake Whatcom, and there's a lot of migratory. There's a lot of bird migration, and there are like 7. Enormous. I don't know if they are Canada geese. They're geese, and they're like the size of a small plane, and they're just flying in formation, and they're flying south right now. I don't know if they're going like to Arizona or something, or they're just going to the southern part of the lake. I don't want to get too carried away.
How many days before pictures?
Every time I see birds flying in that formation, number one, I love it. And number two, I'm like, you guys really do that. That's not just from cartoons.
Or maybe they, I mean, who knows? It could be that art, that life imitates art.
I guess. But man, they really got with that plan, if they didn't know about it until the cartoons. Because mm-hmm. I'm just like, I'm constantly amazed. That's one of my very favorite things to see in the world. And sometimes, because the back behind our house, you know, way down this hill is a lake. And in the front of our house is way down the hill, and through the city is the Bay of Bellingham. But sometimes these birds will just fly in formation from like the lake. They'll just fly right over our house, and they'll just, like, it's the coolest thing. We're getting buzzed by like huge waterfowl, which is kind of fun. Okay, let's do a break. We'll come back with some Michael Penn, and then I wanted to talk about this yoga class I took yesterday.
Oh yeah.
We got the Valentine's idea. I've got some avocado toast related disappointment. There's a lot going on here on a Wednesday, so stick around. We'll be back with more TVTL in just a moment.
She says it's time she goes.
remember this song?
Now I do, yeah, yeah. I would have never known this was Michael Penn, and I wouldn't even be able to hum a bar of it to you, but as I listened to it, I definitely remember this being on the radio. I think it was just a little bit lost in the wash of the, was this very early 90s, probably?
This would have been early 90s. I heard about this album because my buddy Peter Williams, best friend growing up, his older sister Dahlia Williams, she was just, you know, she was, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years older than us. So everything she was into was the coolest thing to me. And so I would kind of like crib her style and things. So I think she had this CD. What else was she into that I was very, there was a couple of other like important pop culture things that sort of were passed down to me from her. But
based on her name, I would probably follow her off the ends of the earth. Like Dahlia Williams just sounds like the coolest girl. She's 3 years older than you. Her name is Dahlia Williams. And she's like telling you about music.
I don't think she was telling me about it. I think I was just stealing CDs out of her room.
Still, though, that's yeah.
Yeah. No, when I met, I remember like when I was a youngster, like really maybe 6th or 7th grade, coming over to Peter's house. And my memory is that she had, I don't know if this is true, she definitely had one side of her head shaved.
Oh, my God.
In my mind, it was like a checkerboard pattern, but maybe it was just shaved. But it was like, I was like, you got it. This person is on another level stylistically. So like, I don't cool. even know how to talk to this person. Right. They are so cool.
Exactly.
And then, I wish I could remember the other. Famously in the world of TVTL, I once borrowed / probably stole her Madonna Immaculate Collection CD, which my dad then found and snapped in half.
Oh, that was her.
Like, that was not my CD.
Oh,
but,
no.
So this that Michael Penn CD, man, I loved that thing. Okay, where should we start here? You know, should we thank our donors of the day?
Yeah.
Lest we forget. Now I'm almost tempted to be like, we should fire back in with some more Michael Penn, but maybe we've.
I mean, I've got it here. What else? You said you liked Half Harvest.
Half Harvest is, I think, a little. Can you start Half Harvest?
One of them. Half Harvest. I don't
care that you won't. Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. I'm down with this.
Okay.
I'm gonna have to listen to this entire album again. All right, I've had my sip of coffee. I'm ready to thank these donors of the day. And we're going to start with, Riley. Riley Calcagno. Every year, Riley. Riley is a musician himself.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he was, and maybe still is. The band, was that called The Onlys?
I'm going to look that up.
Riley is a musician. I believe they've been on the show at some point.
I mean, Riley. I met Riley when he and his dad swung by. I know at least once they swung by just to be on the show, right? Like in your old house.
Yeah, love those guys. Thanks, Riley. Appreciate it. I don't know if Riley used a birthday present on this or something, or if Riley's just like out there. Just gigging, just busking, and throwing the money down for TBTL. But thanks, man. Appreciate it. They're from Seattle. He's from Seattle. Melissa Carr is from Painesville, Ohio.
Hey!
You're entering a world of Painesville. Where's Painesville related to where you grew up?
Goodness. You want me to take a stab at it and be wrong so that people can email in?
No, because that'll stretch you out the rest of the show. Let's just say thanks, Melissa.
Yeah.
Jennifer Evanoff. Of Chicago, Illinois. Where's Chicago in relation?
It's actually, that's a suburb of Cleveland. It's the west side.
Morgan Gilchrist Scott of Middleton, Wisconsin. Tough week for Wisconsinites in the football department last week. Wisconsin losing to Minnesota in that rivalry game. And then the Packers running into the buzzsaw that is the Minnesota Vikings. So, Morgan, if that was hard for you, we're with you. Peace and love. We're thinking about you during this difficult time. Alexis Gee of also Chicago, Illinois. Although this is the one that's in Illinois. It's not the one that's a suburb of Cleveland.
Oh, is there? There's one in Illinois.
Huh. Yeah, there is.
Named after
they call it the other Chicago. And then Luke Hertel of Wakefield, Rhode Island. I dig this distribution today.
Me too.
I mean,
it's
we're kicking it. There's a lot of Midwest activity going on.
But
then I like we got Washington, we got Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin, and then throw in some Rhode Island for you.
Yeah. It's a little, it's like
I
a
found
little
out
spice.
Somebody, RISD, that's, oh, hey, a little spice. That was one of the things that the yoga instructor said yesterday when we were doing a move that hurt. She goes, this one's going to be a little spicy. And I was like, you're so right. That's the feeling I'm having in my legs. Anyway, thanks, Luke, Alexis, Morgan, Jennifer, Melissa, and Riley. Thanks for donating to TBTL. Thanks for making the show possible. Thank you for enjoying this Michael Penn music with us.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right. How about this, Andrew? Can we let's get to the Valentine's suggestions? Maybe we'll just throw those in with emails. Is that cool?
You save the Valentine's for the emails later. Are you saying or do
yeah.
the? Va-
oh, yeah, yeah, sure, yeah. sure. When sure. we get to emails, let's just do them there.
But let's. But cue up that romantic music that you said you had ready yesterday,
oh,
and
man,
then we forgot
I deleted
to use.
That yesterday. But I'll get it
Did
back
you really?
Now that my board. Mm. No. I have it in here. I just mean it's not in the playlist.
Okay.
Because you know, now that my board works. I do not want to miss the opportunity for some romantic Valentine's music. So anyway, in the meantime, well, I'll just tell you that I'm a little sore today because I went and took a yoga class yesterday. I took the easiest one they offer. It's called Gentle Flow, and boy, am I glad I did.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though this was, I mean, this is listed as a yoga class for people that are beginners or have some physical limitations maybe, and they're going to just like, it's really more almost like a meditation than really doing yoga. Even the easiest level of yoga was, I have to say, at times very challenging for me. And there were a number of people in the class who were significantly older than me who were killing it. Like when I was in Downward Dog, I was looking at these women behind me and I was like, they're so much better at this than I am. And it was a struggle for me because the reason I'm here is to one, you know, get some good exercise and two, kind of have a meditative hour where I just am trying to clear my mind and be present in my body and all that. But I had such a hard time not constantly thinking about how dumb I looked. Because everyone else in the class was better at it than me, and I know that's not how the class works. And I know I was in this battle in my mind. I was like, no one is looking at me, no one cares, which was the truth. But I couldn't get over the fact that I just was so bad at it. And the instructor, who was very nice and very professional, like really good at her job, kept kind of coming over to me gently and like moving my foot or saying, and just try to, you know, see if you can open up your, you know, your shoulder blades here or whatever. She kept giving me tips. And it was clear that, like, I was the person in the class who needed the most tips. It was just like,
you're probably
it was
the
a
only
battle.
New, were you maybe the only new person there, though?
I probably. I mean, again, nobody cared. Nobody was judging me. It was such a non-judgmental environment. I probably was the only new person. I understand this was a battle that existed exclusively inside my own head, but man, I was really battling it. Because part of it was, I'm like, I'm here to be centered and one with the universe and present and relaxed. And I was the opposite for like half of the time. Plus, then I realized there was this one time we're doing Warrior II pose. It's not hard. Just you're standing in kind of a lunged position. And I think it was a combination of nervousness and also fatigue, but my legs started shaking kind of in control, like, in the words of Michael Stipe, violently. And I was like, I wanted to get out of the position so that would stop happening because it was embarrassing. But then if I got out of the position, I was sort of like tapping out, and that was embarrassing. I mean, one of the things they say is, hey, anytime this gets too hard, just go into child's pose. Just chill out. Just do whatever you need to do. Like, it's so, so low pressure. But I create pressure in my own mind about this stupid shit, you know? So like, I'm in like Warrior II pose, and I'm like, and then I realized why I was shaking was somewhat fatigue, but it was also because I was so nervous and embarrassed about the fact that I was shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of relaxed, and I totally stopped. Like, I was literally having tremors of embarrassment, which wouldn't be the worst show title.
Mm-hmm.
Tremors
or
of
movie.
Embarrassment.
Tremors 5.
Kevin Bacon, reboot. Anyway, so but then it was kind of great because what I realized was eventually I think I kind of won the battle in my mind. And I was like, this is no one. This is why it's a beginner class. It's for beginners. I'm a beginner. This is normal. And so I kind of – and then I loved the end was like we had this like 10 minutes of just like lying on the mat and kind of just like just relaxing and being present in your body. And the teacher's like cadence was really kind of good for that, relaxing and everything. And I realized that I had inadvertently – this yoga studio is in downtown Bellingham and it's just like on the top floor of a building. It's kind of in a big lofty room. But I had inadvertently set my mat up, which was a whole other thing, by the way. There were so many things – everyone was getting like pillows and like foam blocks and blankets and a mat. And I got all those things out of the room, but I was like, I don't know. Do I need all these? Mm-hmm. Am I getting too many? It's just that you know this, that feeling of just like overwhelming anxiety that you're not doing something right because mm-hmm. you've kind of never done it before and you're going to look stupid.
Yeah.
But what was kind of great was I had inadvertently set my whole thing up right underneath a skylight, the only skylight in the room. And yesterday was one of those weird days where it was like kind of stormy and rainy, but also blue sky, and the clouds were moving really fast. And I didn't realize till I was lying on my back and I opened my eyes that I just had a perfect view of blue sky and then clouds just moving through. It was like if you were going to computer generate a relaxing thing to mm-hmm. look at, it would be this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's good. Like, I thought you were going to say good, you set positive. Up in a place where – and then I realized I'd done it right where the teacher was supposed to be. Nope. But no, that was great, that sounds like.
Absolutely. It was good. It was positive. I like almost went to sleep at the end. I was so just like this – I am one – I am one with the power of being drowsy is really mm-hmm. what I was able to do. The drowsiness in me recognizes the drowsiness in you. Mm-hmm. Namaste. So anyway, that was – and I was going to go – I guess the point of the end of this story is I was totally going to go back today except the class is happening starting in 1 minute. So I guess I'll –
we can do it.
Can we? We got one – put 1 minute on the clock here, everybody. Let's see here. I got this and – anything you want to say, Andrew, get it out of the way now because I'm going to yoga.
Good luck to all.
Anyway, so that was my experience. Overall, very positive. And maybe, who knows, maybe that's the journey of learning to love myself, which is the greatest love of all. It starts with not being embarrassed that I'm pretty bad at yoga. Oh, and the other thing, yeah, the man, Downward Dog. Have you ever done yoga?
No.
Downward Dog, you know, that's you probably know that's a yoga pose, right?
Just yes, because
you've
of course,
heard it
yeah.
enough. That is not – like it's that's just kind of the default setting, and that's like level 0.05 of yoga. I mean you're on your feet and then your hands are on the ground and your body is kind of in a V shape, in an inverted V. There were times where I was like, okay, I'm tired. Like I was physically like quite challenged by this thing, and I guess the reason I'm pointing this out is because – me being me, there was like a variety of classes. One was called like Power Fusion. And I was like, okay, yoga, get at me. I'm going to do Power Fusion, which is like for the highest level yoga people. And God, am I glad I did like the beginner's class.
Yeah.
Because it was physically challenging at times. And the whole point of that class is not even to be physically challenging, I don't think.
Yeah. Oh, God, can you imagine that? Yeah, no, I'm glad that you're right. Yeah, that is, I think, a difference in you. I think that I would have always started with the easiest thing, right? And just like hope that I'm so far above it. You know what I mean? That it's so like yeah. if there's a children's class, I probably all you do is child's pose the whole time. I do think that's a bit of a mind F for them to
class.
Say, hey, if you can't handle warrior pose, no problem, no shame. Just go back into childhood. What is it? Child pose? Like, I got to say, yeah. It's not on
well,
yoga, I guess,
me,
but our society
clarify.
Does. But, okay.
Yes. But let me clarify only because. This teacher was actually, I thought, pretty good at like making it. And that's why I was so mad that I was as embarrassed as I was, because I felt like the teacher did a good job of making it a non-embarrassing environment. What the real child's like, you can go back to child's pose. That was actually said when we were doing some things where you're already on the ground.
Right.
Like where you're like. So in other words, she really wasn't proposing you can do something that's radically different and noticeable, but it won't be embarrassing. It was like I just kind of carried that with me through the rest of the class. I was like, well, if it gets too hard, I can child pose it. But then when I was in Warrior 2 shaking like a leaf, I was like, yeah, but if I go into child pose now, everyone knows I'm a child.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was my afternoon. And I'm going to – oh, I did this I did this deal where for $20 I can go to as many classes as I can stand for a week.
$20 Wow.
Yeah, it's a good deal. So I'm going to try to get back there a few times before my $20 runs out. I'm even thinking about not trying to get out of this class. In other words, I would consider, like, if I keep doing it, I'll probably get a little better at it. And I thought I might just, like, just do this as a, like, not even as an exercise thing, but just do gentle flow a few days a week as a relaxation thing, and then maybe do other exercise in addition to it. Maybe it's not one or the other. Because I did have a good overall, once I got in control of my embarrassment, I actually had a pretty good mental experience. Have you seen the pictures of Knickers, the giant Australian cow?
I have. A bunch of people were sending us or tweeting at us or whatever, photos and articles, and I didn't have time to read the articles until this morning. And so last night, of course, a big chunk of my brain was, oh, yeah, that Photoshop thing that's going around. But clearly, yes, this is not a Photoshop thing. And one of our favorite writers, actually, I don't know if you read the same story I did, but David Roth over at Deadspin wrote about it.
Yeah. Well, we got a little bit of, we got some breaking news related to Knickers.
TVTL breaking news.
Knickers will not be going to the slaughterhouse. The 3,000 pound, and by the way, Knickers is a steer. Our friend Bean, who is a noted cow enthusiast, was tweeting about Knickers. And then I saw, when I got up this morning, he said, oh, and by the way, I've raised a cow. I know it's a steer. Don't at me. Which, if anybody gets to send that tweet, yes, it's Bean. He and his wife, you know, they raised a cow as a pet, and the cow was so adorable. And when the cow was getting on in years, I've talked about this photo before, I think. There's a picture somewhere in their house of Donna reading to the cow, and the cow's head is just like laying on Donna's, you'd say shoulder, but the cow's head is as big as, like, it's as big as half of Donna's entire body. It's like one of the cutest pictures I've ever seen. And it's why I'm glad to now be a very, very judgy and self-satisfied and smug flexitarian. But no joke, when I read about, like, when I read about Knickers, and I'm like so happy that Knickers is too big to go to the slaughterhouse.
Yeah,
because
he's too big to
I'm
eat.
I'm kind of like,
as V was saying last night.
There you go. I was kind of like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not contributing to the Knickers. I mean, currently, I don't want to set up that dynamic because, I was eating pork dumplings at Din Tai the other day. But I will just say that some little part of me is like, oh, if I've eaten 70% less Knickers-related foods in the last couple months, I don't feel terrible about that. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you the story, though, of this cow. Actually, let me do this. Let me play you a little bit of the audio. This was a TV station in Arizona talking about Knickers.
So this is the herd. Wait for it. Look at this thing. We're going to see it in just a second. Oh, my goodness.
Oh my
whoa. His
oh
name
gosh.
Is Knickers. I think Knickers ate too much for Thanksgiving. He's been.
That's not how that's not how this works.
That's not how any of this works. What do you really this video, this audio I'm playing you from this video, it's sort of about Knickers, but it stands as a testament really to how much television hosts should not be allowed to talk to each other off script. Like,
pilot on the pounds, apparently he stands more than 6 feet, 3 inches high, and weighs more than a ton, which is 2,000 pounds. He towers over the other cows on the farm. Colin, our producer, said, just wait for the video. And whoa,
they
mean, he must
like...
be four times the size of the other guys.
Oh my,
holy steroids. Don't eat that one.
Hold that as a drop. Please.
I did. I played it at the top of the show.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Sorry.
Yeah, I know, right? Like,
well, the good news is our brains work the same way. The bad news is I don't listen to the show that I'm on. Sorry.
For Thanksgiving, on Monday when you're like back to work and you're like, I better put on something.
When
tight.
He was walking.
Yeah, I feel like this female newscaster has really locked into this Thanksgiving narrative.
Yeah,
kind of like, stop. It's not working, and that just
Monday when you're like back to work and you're like,
holy steroids! Don't eat that one.
Makes you feel a little bit better about my feasting over Thanksgiving. On Monday when you're like back to work and you're like,
wait. So you feel like you ate too much of Thanksgiving, but you feel better about it because there's a large cow in Australia. These are not related topics, lady.
I better put on something.
When he was walking.
also, I better put on something tight. It's the opposite of what you would do. What's happening?
It's the aphasia, like, news network.
Honestly, Bertations. I mean, the more we dig into this tape, the more questions there really are about this lady's banter. Yeah,
Monday, when you're like back to work and you're like, I better put on something tight.
When he was walking.
She means Spanx?
Oh, maybe.
I don't know if that was a slip of the tongue, or maybe she's trying to say everything feels tight. Look, in fairness, I'm not on television. I'm not being filmed. And I say regrettable and dumb things, sure, and use the wrong word constantly on this show. So I'm not trying to give this lady too much crap. But I do find this happy talk to be very stressful.
The other cows look like puppies. Oh, my gosh. Man, he wasn't lying. That was a big cow.
That was a big cow. Delivered,
oh, my
Colin.
Goodness.
And you're
right.
Delivering with the forecast.
Yes, the next 2 days are going to be amazing, and then rain. Ooh. It's been a long...
I could just leave it going. You could hear the Phoenix forecast for the next few days. Also, by the way, it seems perfectly appropriate that that's a TV station in Phoenix.
I was a little bummed.
Love to our Phoenicians listening out there.
That tape is great for reasons I didn't expect, but this is another Australia story, though. Or is this New Zealand? This is...
Australia,
yeah. So we need to get an Australian news report about this, mate.
Yeah, we probably should. Sorry. ooh, look who's,
thank you. Yeah,
look
no.
who's talking, too.
I'm wondering if I could just slip that in there. Oh, God.
Got some deets on.
Sorry,
I think
Linda.
The NBC has a different some different specifics on Nickers. They said that Nickers was 6'3", the people on TV, and 2,000 pounds. NBC says Nickers is 6'4", and over 3,000 pounds. Nickers is a black and white Holstein Friesian and is owned by a guy named Jeff Pearson. But Nickers is too heavy to go to the slaughterhouse, and will live out. I don't know if Nickers is a boy or a girl, but Nickers will live out their days. By the way, thought to be probably the tallest steer in the country, in the nation of Australia.
I should hope.
Nickers is seven. I know. Can you imagine if there's a taller cow out there? Nickers is 7 years old and will live out his life. I guess Nickers is a boy in Pearson's fields in Lake Preston, southwest of Perth, Australia. So there you go, Andrew. If and when we ever make it to Australia, we've got another place we need to go. We need to go visit Nickers.
And I like that this is a country that is known for its big objects. What are they called? Just large things, big things. What are
big,
they?
Big things.
Yeah. Think. And now they're just like, all right, we can one up that. We can do big things that are actually
Nickers. Stand still,
right
out by the road. This is welcome to what's the town again? Welcome to Lake Preston, home of the giant cow. Wait, that thing's real.
Yeah, it just winked at me. Would you be nervous standing next to Nickers? Follow-up question, would you be nervous standing next to any cow or steer?
Absolutely not. And
really?
This was kind of part of a long-running anti-cat argument that I made for a while, which I regret now because I'm quite a fan of our cat. But I used to always say, if you scaled a dog up, like if you scaled Rudy up to the size of Nickers, it would just be a cow. A dog, like Rudy would, maybe I'm just being overly trusting, but if you scaled Rudy up to that size, Rudy would not be more dangerous to me, I wouldn't think. If you scaled Olive up to the size of a cow, it would be a mountain lion or a tiger and it would kill me. Like, you know what I mean? Like I'm not afraid of cows because they're docile, and I'm also not afraid of Rudy if you made her that big. I'm afraid of Olive if you make her that big.
I think I'm just scared of big animals generally when I'm standing next to them because it's like being in the ocean and feeling the power. Like you're splashing around the ocean and then an undertow gets you a little bit and you're reminded of the power that is there. That, I'm sure there are not a lot of situations in which somebody is just like kind of casually out on the farm, you know, being around cows and suddenly the cows get a bad idea. But for me, sure, just standing there, and horses too. I mean, I think this is something that came later in life because I think I was around farm animals more as a kid, and I don't remember ever being nervous around them or any more nervous than I was around anybody. But like in the few times in my adult life when I've been standing next to a horse, maybe petting its nose a little bit, I can't help but to like think like, wow, this horse, all it has to do is just like basically just quickly, stick its hooves in my chest and I could be dead. Like, even though
he or she is not going to do that, like, it could happen, and I would be powerless against this beast. And I think that, I don't know, I haven't been around a cow in a long time.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I'm supposed to be doing this equine therapy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to start next week. But I think that's, well, I can't tell. I'll talk about it once I start doing it. I don't know exactly how it works, but I'm sure that's part of what's going on is this idea of, like, standing near something that's really huge and, like, having, you know, I guess building some rapport or trust with it. You know what I am oddly having some, it's not related to me, but I have some, you know, we think of deer as being so docile.
Deer,
but we have
creepy.
So many deer around here, and they are, like, you know, a lot of them have their horns now, or their antlers. I guess they're not called horns. And, like, I know that those deer are not going to hurt me. What the real concern is when I'm walking Rudy, I get worried that I really keep Rudy very far away from them. She's largely uninterested, thank God. And also, she doesn't even notice them. I'm like, you're the no instincts dog. Yeah. Like, we'll be walking down the street. We're on, like, the left side of the street. It's not a big road. And then on the right side are, like, six deer. And she doesn't notice them. And I'm like, you would not survive in the wild at all. But I think, man, if a deer just got a wild hare, I mean, forget one with antlers, just regular deer. Yeah. If they were just like, yeah, screw this, they could do some damage. And we're just, like, assuming that they're not gonna flip on us. And, like, lately I've been just kind of, I'm not worried that they're gonna do anything to me when it's just me, but I worry that there could be a scenario where they see Rudy, they get spooked, and one of these bucks with big ass antlers is just gonna like just do me in.
Yeah, no, I when I was in Ohio, I think my dad had just picked me up from the airport, and we were pulling, it was me, my dad, and my stepmom, and, you know, they live in it's like a tiny little subdivision, but exactly, I've probably described it before, what you'd expect, you know, relatively new, built in past 30 years, little beige street, cul-de-sac kind of thing, little condo, and we pull into their driveway, and there's three deers. It looked like a family of deer just standing, like, right there, and guess what? They really did just freeze in the headlights, because we stopped the car so we could stare at them, and they just stared back at us, but I also just think that that area of Ohio, because of all of the, you know, all of the development and all of the houses that, you know, just used to be in just kind of generic wooded land, I think deer are just like, I guess we live in the suburbs now. And they're just like, they seem too comfortable living in the suburbs, but that's on us, not them.
Yeah, that's what I don't get about this Bellingham. I guess part of what it is, because, like, the neighborhood we live in has been around for a while, you know, more than 50 years. I guess what's happening here, and I know you weren't comparing the two, but, I mean, it's like, it's as if that's what's happened here. Like, this was just the woods, like, a year ago, and we built all these houses here. But I guess part of it for us is that our neighborhood is largely surrounded by this park called Whatcom Falls Park. And so we're kind of interwoven into an environment where they probably live naturally. Because, yeah, it's like they're just... Like, I saw a deer taking its kids to soccer practice.
Right.
2 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, ooh, okay. Wow. You guys are really, you're making yourself comfortable here. I mean, it really is like they just live in the neighborhood and they just wander around and they do not run away from people. I mean, I haven't tried to touch one. The most kind of direct interaction we've had as a family was when one did try to get Rudy, apparently. Carrie was doing some yard work. And Rudy, this is back when Rudy, about 15 pounds ago, so she was not very fast. Rudy came hauling around the corner of the front yard and ran into the gated, like, fenced part of our yard. And Carrie looked up, and a mama deer was, like, hot on Rudy's tail. And Carrie slammed the gate shut, and the deer bashed into the gate.
I remember. I think Carrie might have even come on the show that day to talk about it.
Oh,
that scared me over the phone.
Let's talk about Australian accents, one of my favorite pastimes. And if we ever do get to Australia, something that will not get old for you at all.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, hat tip to listener David, who reminded us to bring this one back because I'd promoted this like weeks ago. This op-ed piece in the New York Times actually came out in mid-November. It's technically called an opinion piece, but it's more like an informed article written by someone who's Australian. The woman is named Julia Baird. And she starts off talking about the fact that, and I wouldn't have never known this, that there's kind of a thing in Australia where when Australians become famous in the U.S., unless they're Paul Hogan, I guess, they tend to lose their Australian accent.
Oh.
And that's seen as a kind of a – being a little bit of a traitor, I guess you can say, to their Australian heritage. And this woman is writing that what she really likes is that Hugh Jackman, the actor, has not lost his Australian accent,
mm-hmm.
even though he is very famous in the U.S. and does lots of interviews and is in lots of movies here and that are popular. He is sort of sticking to his Australian roots, and this woman, Julia Baird, is excited about that. She said, today, Mr. Jackman, the star of films like Wolverine and Les Mis, is widely adored in Australia, even by those who never saw him behind a cash register. She had met him once when he was working his day job. But he holds a special place in Australian hearts because international success has not made him pretentious. Most crucially, his accent is still intact. Australians have a strong, often irrational suspicion of people who leave the country, succeed, and change. Oh, look, she says even Paul Hogan, the comedian and actor who played the most iconic Australian caricature, Crocodile Dundee, belied his working class image after he found global stardom and dumped his wife for a more glamorous and American co-star.
Really?
Occasional grumblings are heard about the model, Elle Macpherson. Oh, man. Elle Macpherson loomed large in my mind as a kid. Mm-hmm. Swimsuit model that she was. Or the singer Kylie Minogue, both who have acquired, quote, global accents. I just thought of something, by the way, and we need to get to the actual meat of this story. Think about how ridiculous Crocodile Dundee is as a character. If Americans made a movie called Cowboy John or Cowboy Bill, like in the 80s, where he was just like a guy who goes to Australia, but his whole thing is like, well, I'm just from Texas or whatever. That was a very weird Texas accent. I can legitimately do a much better. I was trying to construct this character in my mind so quickly that the accent was really got the least amount of the attention I was
giving. Like Eugene Levy doing that accent where he pushes his chest out.
How high, Ridge, I could not tell.
There it is.
And you're pushing your boobies out. I'm just saying, like, if I was in Australia, I guess I'd have a mix. Maybe Linda in Australia can hip us to this. I would have a mix of pride and also mortification when Crocodile Dundee crossed over, because it's crazy to me. It never occurred to me till I read that line. It is the broadest of Australian stereotypes. It's like, oh, here's a guy with a knife. He's doesn't know how to take the subway because he's from Australia. Like, he's just such a broad character. And it so obviously does not describe the nuance of this place that is Australia.
This is embarrassing for me, I think, because I always assumed that Crocodile Dundee was a movie made by Americans. And that's why it was hokey. Not that
it might have been.
Okay.
It very well might have been. Paul Hogan is who she's talking about.
Right.
Okay, I'm sorry, but my point is not, I guess, that it was made by Australians. I'm pretty sure it was probably made by some big Hollywood studio. I'm just saying, like, it's crazy to me that it never occurred how reductive the character of Crocodile Dundee is.
Because
it's so obvious that it is. But until I read an Australian writing about it, it hadn't occurred to me. Okay, anyway. Let's see. I'll skip towards the end of this article. This writer, Julia, is talking about how people love to do Australian accents, people who are not from Australia, but that it's actually harder to do. What Americans, and to a lesser extent the British, fail to recognize is that as much as they mock us, they are almost consistently incapable of imitating the Australian accent, no matter how often they repeat, "G'day, mate." Even the great Meryl Streep failed to capture it when she portrayed Lindy Chamberlain in the movie Evil Angels, about a woman whose baby is killed in the Australian outback. The line remains famous for its melodrama, "The dingoes ate my baby." But in Australia, oh God, that's good. That is, and now I'm settling into it.
Yeah, you're just dialing it. Just
in the words of Corky, I'm really honing in on it. Foreign media's inability to capture how Australians really talk has been back in the news lately, thanks to the new season of the American sitcom The Good Place, part of which takes place in Sydney. Are you caught up on The Good Place, or are you to the part where they're in Australia?
I am caught up to the part where they're in Australia. I watched the first couple of episodes of the latest season. I've kind of petered out. I need to get back in it. I feel like the ins and outs of the show have gotten increasingly complicated, and I have to pay more attention to it and less attention to Hearthstone.
I'm with you. Sure, which remains uncomplicated in its ins and outs.
Right. I mean, I did build a bunch of Cthune decks that aren't worth anything anymore, but you know, what are you going to do?
It's funny because I love Australia as an idea. I've always wanted to go there, but it is a weird setting for this season of The Good Place to happen. It's just so kind of, I don't know how to describe it. It's vaguely Canadian to me. It's so much like America, but a little different.
Mm-hmm,
maybe
sure.
That's the point. But it's also very clear. I'm sure they didn't go to Sydney to shoot The Good Place, because I guess what I'm saying is it's the backdrops are so nonspecific to Australia.
Yeah, they're in a laboratory. They're
in a bar that's like an American themed bar in Australia. They're in technically in the Sydney Opera House, but that could be anywhere. They're on a street. Like it seems like a weird place as a backdrop. But what hadn't occurred to me is what this woman's pointing out, that Australians are baffled, if not outraged, by hearing American actors mock and mangle the way we speak. So it's like apparently everybody who's pretending to be Australian in The Good Place, because they're really from Tarzana or something, are like doing a bad job of pretending to be Australian on The Good Place.
Oh, I see. So I think I got lost in the meta there.
Not the characters, not the main characters, but just like the person working at the espresso stand, or the person,
sure,
the people that are supposed to be portraying Australians as the main characters from The Good Place have now ended up in Australia. The people playing quote unquote Australians are doing a very bad job with the Australian accents, because mm-hmm. they are in fact just Americans.
Right.
Why is it so hard to imitate the Australian accent? Maybe part of it is that there's something deeply laid back about the language. One theory suggests that this is because of our habitat. Given the swarms of flies buzzing around the outback, the legend goes we developed a pattern of speech that would involve only opening our mouths slightly for fear of letting in insects. That is probably not true, but we can conduct entire conversations while barely moving our lips. You're welcome, by the way, for me not reading that in my best Australian accent. It's hard for me, but I'm stifling it. In recent years, another startling theory has emerged. Drunken convicts are to blame. Dean Frenkel, a lecturer in public speaking and communications at Victoria University, wrote back in 2015, "Our forefathers regularly got drunk together and through their frequent interactions unknowingly added an alcoholic slur to our national speech patterns. For the past two centuries, from generation to generation, drunken Aussie speak continues to be taught by sober parents to their children. A horde of linguists dismissed this, but the theory predictably got coverage around the world. It's what people want to think about Australia." Okay, so maybe it's not true. But the woman says the professor is right about how lazy the speech is. We only use 2/3 of our articular muscles. We replace a T's with a D's. So we say important instead of important,
mm-hmm.
important. And we drop I's, Australia,
mm-hmm.
and we make them into oys, right. But we also add vowels in surprising places. Future becomes fiecha.
Yeah, adding syllables too, yeah.
So it's weird. It's like they're dropping some things, but then they're adding some things. The people best placed to mock Australians' accent are actually Australians. Self-parody is a national sport. On Twitter, we lampoon our country by calling it hashtag Australia. We shorten good on you to on ya, and we stretch out the greeting mate to mate, the length depending on the depth of affection and time of day. These kinds of joyous subtleties are lost on outsiders, though, and that's what American television and movie producers need to understand. Next time, hire Australian actors to do Australian accents, like say, me mate Wolverine. So that's Julia Baird writing about the Australian accent. I don't know. I think my accent got kind of better by the end of that, and I think I think I might be ready to start using it more frequently on the show, if you're okay with that.
That sounds good. Could we get her on the show to help you with your Australian accent?
You know what? That's not a bad idea.
That would be a lot of fun.
Let's see. Her Twitter handle is listed at the end of this story. So we could – she's a contributing opinion writer and is a journalist at the Australian – excuse me, at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
And we lost our shot. There we go. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
Why don't we do, if you have any emails you like, and actually, you know what, I've got a couple sharp shots that I got to get to. Yeah, or this.
Wow, that's so violent sounding. I love the fact that there's something.
It's a shotgun.
Yeah. Oh, that's why. Yeah, it's more
of a
shotgun.
Which is not really how you would sharpshoot.
Right.
If you sharpshot someone with a shotgun, it would be the world's worst approach.
Right. Yeah.
But it is the sound of, you know, you go into podcasting with the sound effects you have.
Right.
Not the sound effects you want.
Right. So what did you want to, hold off on
the
Valentine's
Day? Well, I wanted to talk about that and
titles?
Then shift into Valentine's.
Okay. So
mostly because I'm playing the email music, and then I can't play that in the Valentine's.
So do you want to start with Anne's email then? Did you have it in front of you? I got to hear.
Will you read it real quick?
Yeah. So, why don't you set it up? We're talking about Tim Allen yesterday. We're talking about his new sitcom and his old sitcom. And you said something like, did you say the only cool thing Tim Allen ever did, or did you say that Tim Allen never did anything good?
No, I said the only thing he did, this is a little hyperbolous and not great messaging for the kids. I said the only cool thing he ever did was try to sell cocaine.
Oh,
I'm
right,
not a fan of his creative work. And then Anne said, correction.
Sorry to
What did she say exactly?
Sorry to sharpshoot. The only cool thing Tim Allen ever did was Buzz Lightyear.
Now, here's what I want to say about that. I do not think Tim Allen was essential to the success of the Toy Story movies or to Buzz Lightyear. I think any dingus could have played Buzz Lightyear. I don't think any dingus could have played Woody, which was Tom Hanks, obviously, or the other characters. I think that Tim Allen was asked to play a robot who didn't know he was a toy, an idiot toy who didn't realize he wasn't a spaceman. And I don't think that his acting is good in that. But I know that by saying that, it sounds like I'm assailing the Toy Story franchise, which I know is near and dear to the hearts of many people. Some people consider Toy Story 3 one of the greatest movies of all time. I have not seen it. I should probably watch it. I saw the first couple. I loved them. I'm into the whole thing. I would argue that if anyone in the movie could be replaced without much harm, I would say it's Tim. I tried to sell cocaine, Alan.
A couple of things. I think they're making. Is this true that they're now looking at making Toy Story 4? And our buddy, your buddy, friend of the show, Wynn Rosenfeld, who works with Jordan Peele. I think it's maybe them working on that.
Seriously?
I thought so. Also, Wynn tweeted out yesterday that he and Jordan Peele are working on a Candyman reboot.
I know.
How about that?
It's terrifying. Yeah, I guess he and Jordan co-wrote a script, an update of the Oh my God, that movie scared me so much when I was a kid. And then we used to go in the bathroom at North Seattle Christian and say the Candyman five times, try to get him to show up.
Yeah,
man, I was scared. Yeah, so that's gonna be fun. Also, that's like, it's crazy to me that like Wynn is a big Hollywood player now.
Yeah, I'm not. Maybe I'm wrong about Toy Story 4. Maybe maybe Jordan Peele and him are not associated with that at all. I don't know why.
I feel like I would have heard about
that.
Yeah,
you must have. Candyman, legit. I don't know why. They are working on a Toy Story 4, though, but it's with director Josh Cooley, and I'm not seeing Jordan anywhere connected. I don't know where
Toy
I got
Toy Story
that.
4. Yeah, so anyway, Ann, listen, I think my argument would be, peace and love, my argument would be that the greatness of Toy Story, the writing, the animation, all of that, and the performances by many of the other characters has clouded your brain to thinking that Tim Allen is good in Toy Story. I think he's serviceable.
I am going to not make the obvious Santa Claus 3, The Escape Clause joke about that being his only watchable film, but I would say I'm looking at his filmography here, and I have never seen this all the way through, but Genevieve will swear by 1999's Galaxy Quest. Now, I don't know that Tim Allen couldn't be replaced in that, but I mean, he's really supported by, and I'm reading this, but Sigourney Weaver,
I think that's more of an Alan Rickman, vehicle in my mind.
Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell, yes. Like those are huge heavy hitters. Now,
again,
Tim Allen plays the kind of main leader.
He's the
part.
James T. Kirk.
Yes, he plays the asshole.
That's like the same. Funnily enough, it also involves space. I think he's serviceable. But he's serviceable at playing a bozo because he is a bozo, and he just, no one tells, like, it's like he's able to embody the character of this James T. Kirk type dude. But all the heavy lifting and the real nuance and the good acting, to me, like you said, is that goes more to Tony Shalhoub and Alan Rickman and those folks.
Yeah, I think of Alan Rickman first. And even Tim Allen, yeah, he's fine in that. But the parts I've seen, even that, he could still be very improved upon, that character. There's no nuance. He's pretty wooden. But again, I've never seen that all the way through. But it's kind of a parody of the people who would be in a Star Trek type of show.
I believe it is. It's like they are on a Star Trek type show, but then they actually have to go do some real heroics in space, is the premise. And let me just, I will admit, I will shoot myself.
Ooh, that's violent.
You really don't like that.
I'm gonna go over to Snowflake Lane over in Bellevue. I didn't realize that there's actually a Christmas area in Bellevue called Snowflake Lane, and every time I hear it, I'm like, that's where I belong.
I will admit that my disdain for Tim Allen is 100% because of his politics, and because I don't think he's very funny or good, but the politics are a big part of it. And that's my own coastal elite bias. Like, if he were apolitical, I would not spend as much time as I have trying to denigrate his creative contribution to the world. Although I still think Home Improvement was a pretty lousy show. Anything else in the email department that we need to get to before we switch to Valentine's?
Let me... it's hard to... Maybe it shouldn't mix Valentine's and a Christmas project, but... once again, I believe this is the third year in a row, longtime listener and friend of the show, Melisande, is organizing a Christmas card exchange among the tens.
Oh, cool.
And a bunch of people, she's calling it the TBTL is Card Senders program, is starting up again. I'd love for a show announcement. Let's see here. People can send their addresses to tbtlcards@gmail.com. They'll be given a list of other 10s addresses to send holiday cards to, and everybody can spread seasonal cheer and help end global loneliness. So again, it's tbtlcards@gmail.com. If you've been part of it in the past, I believe Melisande will be reaching out to you based on your old email line. But if you are new, it's tbtlcards@gmail.com and put new in the subject line.
All right. Thanks, Melly, for running that.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
I know that's been really fun for folks in years past, people that get a lot of Christmas cards, and some people maybe who aren't getting as many, so it's nice to get one. Maybe it's just early, or maybe people are slacking, but like, we haven't gotten many, I think we have gotten one Christmas card up here at Burbank Springs.
Oh, it's not even December yet.
I guess. I mean, I'm not complaining. I guess maybe it happens later. I don't know. I feel like some people
really
get that stuff done in like June or something.
Yeah, no, I bowed out.
I've got an idea. Maybe we can talk about this more as time goes on, but I got this Christmas card idea that I really want to do, and I feel like Carrie's kind of meh on it, and I just think it's such a strong idea. But depending on what happens, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag yet, depending on if it happens or not. But
oh, it involves putting a cat in a bag. Ooh.
Yeah. Oh,
dude,
yeah.
No. I mean, no, I don't. That doesn't
sound
Christmassy.
We're going to mail a bagged cat. Mm-mm. A bagged cat to every person on our Christmas card list.
No, I'm with Carrie. I'm meh on this, too. I have some fun emails.
You're more than
meh. I have some fun emails and stuff I really want to share with you, but I don't want to do that now. As a matter of fact, I got one. I'm going to tease one, so we'll definitely
get
to it tomorrow.
I'm already 20 minutes late for my yoga class.
Oh, shit. We got one about cleaning coffee machines that I find immensely fascinating, and I think that you will like it as well. You and I were talking about, cleaning coffee, more like coffee pots, not coffee machines.
Yes.
I got an email from Angie that I really want to share with you, but I sort of feel like I'd like to transition into talking about some of these Valentine's Day show titles that listeners have been sending in.
Be happy to do that.
Love this.
You know what I just realized?
That this is scary as shit.
Yeah, put this over the Amazon commercial.
Yeah.
It is pretty. It is oddly ominous.
It sounds like Halloween.
Even though it's listed as Valentine's Day music. All right. So, in case you missed yesterday's show, we're going to do a Valentine's radio special that will run anytime from February through March.
Actually, we've closed the window a bit. I believe now it will just run through February.
Okay. Which will run through February, so you may hear it February 28th, mm-hmm. when you've long since stopped feeling as romantical as you might have on February 14th. Anyway, we're doing a Valentine's special, and we're trying to think of a name for it, and I suggested a lot of real club bangers yesterday, which Andrew shot down. Because
kind of cruelly, too. Like, not even...
I would say, it was your birthday,
mm-hmm.
so I'm letting you do it. But ideas such as the TBTL Valentine's Day Podcastacre. Radio special. A woman needs a man like a fish needs a TBTL Valentine's Day radio special. Happy Valentine's. No explanation.
Times.
My heart
that
will
one.
Go
yeah.
on.
Okay.
Valentine's. Mm-hmm. No explanation. My heart will go on. The radio. A TBTL Valentine's special. Public radio is for lovers. A TBTL Valentine's special. And then you'd get more TBTL Valentine's radio specials if you smiled. These are all ideas that were shot down. See, yeah, they're a little better day, too.
Yeah,
it's like pizza.
It's like leftovers. Yeah. It's like that saucy soup of leftover Chinese food I eloquently described yesterday.
Folks have been emailing in some ideas. What do you see in there, my
friend?
We
got a few here. I'm going to just tell you all right now, and I mean, maybe I shouldn't spoil the well. I consider all of these to be conversation starters.
Sure.
I don't see any in here that are necessarily winning me over lock, stock, and barrel. That could be me, though. Maybe you'll be into one of these. So we have one more day, like literally one more day to get in some more ideas. But let's go through these first. Lauren says, Love is on the Air, a TBTL radio special. That's not too bad.
What is that? Love is in the Air. What is that song? That song is famously in a movie. And people love it.
I don't know. Are you looking it up or you want me to? Love is in the Air.
I'm doing it.
John
I feel
Paul
like
Young.
I feel like... dig it. Yeah, let's do the rest of them over this.
Is this it?
Yeah.
John Paul Young, Love is in the Air.
Love is in the air. Everywhere I look around.
What? There's a movie. Sorry, people are freaking out somewhere.
Music from Australia and New Zealand in the year 1978.
Oh, come on.
What is happening?
Is this at the end of Strictly Ballroom?
Oh, maybe. I've never seen that movie.
Oh,
everything
is yes.
freaking coming they back
end,
to Australia.
Everything's coming up Aussie. Dude, this is totally at the end of Strictly Ballroom, an amazing movie from Australia.
Really?
When are we moving to Australia, dude?
I guess soon.
I mean, I got a criminal record.
Yeah.
We can move down there.
I got things I'm running from, things I'm hiding from.
I like to be drunk and not open my mouth when I talk.
Uh-huh. So Love is on the Air, a TBTL radio
special.
I dig
it.
Yeah, I like that.
This went up the... That just went up the list in my estimation. There you go.
Glenn suggests a TBTL heartbreaker. So that's making me sad. David has two that he threw on the Barbie. The Many Loves of TBTL, a Valentine special.
Okay.
And also,
there's going to be some people lining up to legally prohibit that show from broadcasting.
Exactly. I just feel like we're
the many loves of TBTL. Who hosts that? Luke Burbank? Am I one of the many loves? God damn it. Cease and desist.
And also, David, I believe this is maybe a riff on something that you would suggest yesterday. Who loves you, baby? A salute to Valentine's Day.
I literally said that one. So
you did say something about
biting
who loves
my rhymes.
But what was yours,
though? Savalas.
Just who loves
Mine
your baby? A TBTL.
Who loves your baby? A TBTL Valentine's special.
See, I think that might be leading the pack. And then Ray suggests "Blinded by Love" and "Ready for Radio." Blinded by love and ready for radio.
See,
if I hear "Blinded by," I go right into
Manfred Mann.
Yeah, sure.
By the way, this song is good, right? Turns up. This is Tom Jones' version.
John Paul Young.
Oh, you are so
Note written and produced by the legendary George Young, big brother of Angus and Malcolm Young of AC/DC.
Man, everything's coming up. Everything's coming up down under. I feel like just on the strength of this song, we might have to use that as the title of the show, just so we can use this song. If you would like to submit an idea, send it to us, luke@tbtl.net, andrew@tbtl.net, and put Valentine's show a name or something in the title so we know what we're looking for.
Yeah.
But some good stuff there. Love is on the air.
Love is on the air. That I'm really coming around to that. Lauren, sorry I dismissed it so early on. All right, man. Now where are we in this show? We're only an hour and
done.
A half in. That doesn't seem right. We have to do at least 45 more minutes of content, right?
My phone just told me it's almost time to go to bed, though. It's just weird. So, all right. Well, let's wrap this bad boy up. Oh, hey, you know what? Christmas music. Our friend, Phyllis Fletcher, also known as P. Fletch, sent us an idea for a song. Why doesn't the computer want to let me?
I got her email here. I hadn't listened to these, but she did send us a couple of
Christmas
songs in the Dab Kings.
Yeah. Fletch, full name Fletch F. Fletch.
She sent in a couple of songs she's been jamming out to this holiday season. One of them is the Sharon Jones and the Dab Kings, R.I.P. Sharon Jones. This is the version of It's White Christmas, right?
Yeah. Let's do that. Maybe we can save for other picks.
Thoughts on a show title?
I can restart this, too, if need be. I got Schrodinger's Walsh, but you're right. We went to that joke a lot. Avocado toast-related disappointment, which was a funny thing
you
said.
I never talked about that, but I'll have an update tomorrow.
Okay.
The short version is I bought avocado last night. I was all excited to make some avocado toast. Which is just hilarious to say out loud that you'd be excited about that. I was also stressed about making it, which is also hilarious because it couldn't be easier to do. It's right there in the title. You toast some bread, you put some avocado on it. But then I did this whole thing, the avocado. I was at the Whole Foods, and I was looking for a ripe avocado, and the lady, a woman who was also a customer, said, "Yeah, they got nothing."
Mm.
And I was like, she's probably just being a little extra. She meant they have not. They don't have any ripe avocados. Sorry, when she said they had nothing, that's what she was indicating. And I thought she was being extra. And then I came home and got the avocado all cut up, and I was like, "Nah, this is so underripe. I can't use it. It's not. It was like hard plastic or something."
Got to put it in a paper bag, right? Isn't that how you?
I got one in a paper bag, and then the other one because it was it wasn't free.
No,
I put the still underripe avocado remnants or whatever. I put that one in a bowl, put it in the refrigerator, covered it in cellophane. I don't know if that's what you do, but like, what do you do with a peeled avocado that's underripe?
I don't know. I don't mess around with avocados all that much. I just started eating
texturally,
like,
not your jam.
Exactly. The flavor is not certainly overwhelming, but I've definitely eaten it more. I used to, if there was guacamole on a table and chips, I would never eat it. I would eat salsa or I'd eat the chips dry. Now I'll mess with it a little bit. But it's not something that I really crave. So Genevieve is the avocado person in this house.
I've got two little food things I can report back on tomorrow. One, if I got to make my avocado toast or not, which I bought special rustic bread for. I did a whole thing. And two, and then that's number one. Excuse me. And number two, I'm going to try to make my own ranch dressing today, which I bought all the fixings for. Because I'm on this trying to eat real foods thing, and one of the things I notice is that any kind of store-bought like ranch dressing is just full. It's got 90 million ingredients in it, most of which are like xanthan or other kind of weird preservatives. And so I figured if I could learn how to make my own, because it's just basically like buttermilk and some dill and a few other things. If I could like get a good homemade ranch dressing recipe down that I didn't even need to consult the recipe on eventually, I could just throw a few things together. Like, Carrie knows how to make some different really great, like, oil and vinegar salad dressings that she does that she doesn't even use the recipe for. She just knows how to make it. I feel like that's a really good skill to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just have one, and it's lemon and oil and garlic.
So I'm gonna try to make my own ranch dressing today, and tomorrow I'll report back on how it turned out. So I got a big day ahead of me, Walt.
Sounds good. I am starving. I cannot wait to, again, I'm feeling, I think I might have just woken up, so my day is just beginning. Okay, so back to show titles, though. The first two that I mentioned, I'm actually dismissing out of hand, because apparently that's my thing today. I have two more here, though. Tremors of Embarrassment. And The Drowsiness in Me Recognizes the Drowsiness in You, which I really like that one. Yeah,
that one makes me laugh.
Let's do it. Let us.
It feels good to laugh.
It feels good. All right.
That's a decent Habsburg impression. Whatever. I don't know what his name is in that.
All right. Well, I have this music. We got a little preview of it underneath us, but now I'm ready to fire it for real. If you're feeling it.
I am feeling it. Yeah. Anybody else who wants to send in their social studies classes saying the mountain too tall, feel free. Because today, we have to do it. And it's a giant pain in the ass. But I guess we'll do it. Thanks for listening, everybody. How quickly I go from something being the standard to being like, I got to do this again.
You're not going to do
it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Please remember, go Mariners, go eat a bagel, go Browns, go Seahawks. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.